So what's cool part about being on the road is you get to meet some really interesting people. And maybe about a year and a half ago, I was at one of my favorite bars in Playa del Rey named Moe's Bar and ran into a gentleman by the name of Brandon Giraldez, who has watched the show and knew who I was. And we basically just met each other, and he starts talking about what he does for a living, and he creates toys. Well, I was lucky enough this past week to go by his studio slash office slash playroom, and and after seeing what he did, I knew he had to come on the show. So, guys, I want to present to y'all a really cool dude. He's got some awesome stories. He loves eating and drinking and traveling. Specifically, loves some whiskey. And his company's called Beeline Creative, but I'd like to introduce you guys to Brandon Giraldez. Guys, Brandon, thanks for being on
What's up, brother?
the show, man. Hey, Brian, what Russell didn't mention was he actually gave his belt buckle to my girlfriend
No.
that
And then Russell says, "Did
night.
I?"
So
That's the
yeah,
best
we were
part about
friends ever
it. Did
since. Fun fact.
That's so weird.
I think we had a couple of shots in there as well.
Where does
but it
she
was always a good mix.
does she keep it under her pillow like I asked?
Oh my God.
She has it somewhere. I think it's it. Yeah, she's got it in her dresser somewhere like
The worst part is I can literally see Russell like walking out the front door like with his legs spread a little bit wider with his hands on his belt loops, and then he gets into his car and he reaches under the front seat, grabs another belt buckle, puts that bitch right back on, and drives away into the fucking sunset. That's it right
next
there.
car. Yeah. She's my fiance now, so it's all good.
Oh
That's
my
awesome.
Lord.
That's a really sweet girl.
Just a
Really sweet
last
girl.
opportunity. Russell gave her a last opportunity, I guess.
Really sweet lady. No, I do remember. That was actually really fun. Especially because you guys are just like so cool. It wasn't the way it made it sound. We all
Yeah,
made it sound.
we're both big fans of Bar Rescue, and it was like, man, is that Russell Davis over there? And so you were sitting with Mo, the owner, and another gentleman by the name of Alton, who works at Mattel. He's also in the toy industry. And so I was
Yeah, it
like,
makes the Hot Wheels.
he's like, yeah, that's him. Come over and meet him. So that's kind of where it started. You came over, got us a shot, and
Yeah.
we just stayed in touch ever since.
I love it, man. Oh man, now you just gave away that I buy people shots. Now everybody out there is gonna want a shot from me. Which I'll probably do anyway, let's just be honest.
You don't have to worry about me, Russell. I don't do shots. I do car bombs.
Car bombs, just car bombs.
And I'll tell you why
Holy
someday.
car
I'll
bombs.
tell you why. We talked about car bombs in the past.
Yeah, we did.
I
We
didn't tell
did.
you why I do car bombs, though, but I will at a later date. I'll tell you in Reno. Sorry, Brandon, I interrupted your interview.
Brandon, you're just cool at what you do, man. So if you don't mind talking about, I mean, you've got some really awesome products that you've developed. You got the Star Wars signature beer steins. You got the Pulp Fiction talking figures, which are explicit, which are awesome. Got to see you play around with those. And you've even kind of broken into the bar world with doing these shakers with the Senor Shaker and stuff. So, I mean, what's driving you and how did you get into this? I just want to know your story. It's so cool.
Well, I'll try to keep this podcast short. I know you
We got no, we are, we have no time frame, dude. We
Excellent.
have nobody, nobody's even paying us. We can do whatever the fuck we want. We talk for 4 hours on the first podcast.
Parts to the second one.
What's that?
I'm about halfway done with your second podcast. I was like, man, there's another part left. So.
Because the first one was four different episodes. We have so much to talk about. Let's just keep going. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Duff. It's one for me.
But anyways, yeah, so I was a an I grew up drawing cartoons, and I wanted to be an animator and work for Disney, and that was my big dream. And so I packed up my things and moved to LA after college, and realized that it was very tough industry, and that was there was a ton of people that were better than I was when it came to drawing. And I just kind of fell into the toy industry. I had no idea that there were jobs for people that could, you know, creatively come up with toy concepts. And I started about 15 years ago and working for a lot of the larger toy companies, and branched out, started my own thing. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since. So really, it started with a bobblehead that I did for Hugh Hefner way back when. That was the first product I ever made. And
you've got some stories about the Playboy Mansion.
I do, yeah. It was pretty crazy because the Playboy Mansion, I don't know if you guys have ever been.
Hold on, Brandon. I'm actually going to cancel the next guest, so go ahead.
The Playboy Mansion's in it's called Beverly Glen, but it's in Holmby Hills area. And I would essentially just make up excuses to kind of go over there and say, like,
I want to see a boob. I'll be back.
Hef's girlfriend at the time, one of the three girls next door, Holly Madison, called me up out of the blue. And said, "Hey, Brandon, this is Holly. Do you like pizza?" And I was like, "What the hell?" I was like, "Yeah, I like pizza." And so she invited me over, and I was there with all these playmates, basically just, you know, talking about what their dolls, how they wanted their dolls to look. And so I would go over like every other week and just, you know, "Hey, what do you think of the packaging?" Shoes from red to pink? I don't know, but
this went on for 7 months.
It went on for about 7 months.
No shit. There you go.
I developed a lot of products for Playboy, and I've been lucky enough to be, you know, on that guest list for the last, I don't know, 10 years, whatever it's been. And they've been great. So, but yeah, that kind of opened the door for me to do products for a number of other television networks. I've done a lot of work for NBC and CBS and Sci-Fi Network, and you name it.
Yeah, I just think it's unbelievable, and you got the Star Wars thing going on now too.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about those. Those are called Signature Steins, and they're these massive beer steins that they're figural. They look like Darth Vader, Boba Fett, R2-D2, whatnot. It's got a traditional thumb lift, and you drink out of them. So
it's so cool.
We've got the first series out now. It's everywhere. And we're coming out with episode 7 steins next, and a new line of product in March that's also for Star Wars. So it's pretty cool to kind of do something fun that's got a creative spin to it, and we're bringing something unique and innovative to a traditional beer mug that's been out for years.
Sharknado.
You got Sharknado. Yeah. I mean, the Pulp Fiction dolls, the explicit dolls, are just funny as hell and awesome. It's funny.
The Pulp Fiction stuff, I started out doing talking figures with Anchorman a couple years ago. And Will Ferrell was a huge fan of the, it was a Steve Austin Bionic Man figure that was like late 70s. And Will Ferrell loved it. And he's like, "Can you put a bionic eye in my action figure?" And I was like, "Well, that makes no sense, but okay." So I said, "If we're making this big figure, I want to be able to have audio. Is it okay if I use, you know, your voice from the movie and all that kind of stuff?" And so it was this action figure that basically said, "You're a dirty whore and go back to Whore Island." And it was a lot of fun. And I got a lot of interest, and, you know, it was out in all the retailers, and it did really well. And that kind of spawned into the next line, which was Pulp Fiction, which just released this holiday. And it's been well received by everybody. And we've got Sam Jackson and John Travolta and Bruce Willis. And we just got the rights to do Harvey Keitel for Winston Wolfe.
That's awesome.
And, even Quentin Tarantino himself, so it's pretty cool.
Dude, you've got Uma Thurman with the blood coming out of her nose.
A lot of people have asked for that figure, man. It's crazy.
That's cool.
So Uma would probably come later down the line, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. Sharknado was one of those things where I was like, "I'll do Sharknado." They hit me up to do it. They did a huge promotion for it, and I did it just because I wanted to be in the movie. I was like, "Man, I want to get eaten by a shark." Unfortunately that didn't work out, although they do tell me there's a spot for me in Sharknado 4, so we'll see. I'm not holding my breath.
That's wild.
That's awesome, man. And that thing went from 0 to 60 in like no time. And I'm sure you saw that represented at Toy Sounds too.
Oh yeah, it was crazy, man. It was one of those things where it was just like, and I don't know if you've seen those movies. They're horribly awesome, I guess you would say. But it was fun, and we did one for Hasselhoff. We did a bobblehead for Hasselhoff as well, which was cool working with him. It's cool to be able to work with all these different celebrities. And over the years, I've done Pirates of the Caribbean and Real Steel and Smurfs and you name it.
So who are the coolest and or craziest to actually just like work one-on-one with to do their figures?
I don't know, man. It's been Sam Jackson was really cool. I mean, me and him exchanged a lot of, you know, private messages and tweets and that sort of thing. He was very receptive of his doll, thought it was awesome, or his action figure, thought it was cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. And then
he's exactly the guy you would want him to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly. he was cool about it. So
motherfucker.
what's the process for them? You know, I mean, is it a meeting with you and then you do an illustration and then they approve? And then, I mean, what is the process of all of this? How does it happen?
Well, basically what we'll do is first we got to come up with a concept. So there's a lot of fans out there. I'm a toy geek. I've been collecting toys and I'm into comics and, you know, like you, Russell, and all that kind of stuff. So for me, it's like, well, you know, there's a want for it. People have been wanting to see something like this for a long time. I thought, you know, we really had something special, that they were the first talking action figures that have been out there. So to have an action figure that says fuck 13 times is actually pretty appealed to me. I didn't know if people would dig it, but the movie is such a popular movie, and it's been around for 20 years now. And so what I did is I came up with a concept. I pitched it to the licensor, which is Miramax. And then Miramax needs to show it to Quentin Tarantino. It needs to have Quentin Tarantino's blessing. And once it has Quentin's blessing, then it needs to go out to Sam Jackson, John Travolta, Bruce Willis, all the different actors. And usually that's a long process where it's, you know, so-and-so doesn't like his face, or change this or change that. And it could be months and months of development. But we were lucky that Quentin loved everything right off the bat. He approved everything. He sent it out to Sam Jackson, and there was no changes required. And we just started rocking and rolling, man. We just made the product, and it's been selling well ever since.
That's awesome, man. That's fucking cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so you're a cocktail guy. I mean, you love your whiskey. You got a whole whiskey selection, you know, and so you started creating signature shakers. You know, the first is the Señor Shaker. I mean, what made you decide to do with that? Well, first, what is it exactly for the world to know? But also, what made you get into this, and what do you have planned?
Well, honestly, I was sitting at this, it was a Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles, Santa Monica, having a few margaritas and having dinner with a friend of mine. And I just noticed the bar and the bar accessories and things like that. I said, man, wouldn't it be cool to just do something unique and kind of a classic, fun, you know, a fun, unique twist to a classic bar accessory. And so Señor Shaker was born. I drew it on a napkin. And it's essentially a margarita shaker with a big sombrero and a mustache. And it's just something, you know, people use their bar tools, you know, they put them in a cupboard, they collect dust. So this was something that I really wanted to leave out and have people say, oh, wow, that's awesome. And it's something that sits on your bar. And so we just launched that not too long ago. And we've got a whole line of signature shakers that we're doing that are themed very, you know, we've got like the Tennessee Mixer, and we've got a which is more based on Jack Daniels. We've got an old time tumbler type of shaker, which is, he's got the bowler hat. and a nice copper finish. So it's just fun, unique bar accessories that's different from all the stuff that's out there on the shelves.
I love it. I love how you merged your, you know, all your interests into to doing something from toys to drinks.
Yeah, I'm a everything kind of revolves around the beer steins and the liquor and the cursing. So it's interesting. But we don't do, I mean, we do all sorts of things, and we've done products. We've done, you know, plush and action figures. And so we do collectible toys for adults, and we do, you know, stuff for younger kids as well.
Mm-hmm. And definitely, you got them on the camera right now, too. You just see, like, the wall.
Oh, that's actually why I'm not saying anything. I'm actually, like, I've zoomed the whole screen out. So that I can actually see. No offense, dude. I'm sorry. I did the same thing with Alexis Monroe, but
he's like the creeper.
Yeah, I am. I just sit in the background. No, I'm actually like checking it out. I'm looking at it right now. Is that Marty McFly?
That is Marty McFly. Man.
Hell yeah! See, I'm looking. I told you I was creeping in there.
We did that with Universal about a year ago, and unfortunately, that was a deal that just didn't go through. And Michael J. Fox was really excited about it. And at the end of the day, it came down to, you know, it just didn't work out logistics-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
how often,
got it.
How often does that happen? I mean, you know, that you
I have
put
a horrible joke
into it and it just stops. What's the horrible joke?
I have a horrible joke, dude.
Do it.
So bad. And I think Brandon knows where I'm going with this.
I know what you're going to say, yeah.
It wasn't a bobblehead for Michael J. Fox, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
Oh,
sorry, dude. I had to do it. I had to do it. It was if I didn't do it, I would regret this interview.
And you could write into us at Road Rash Pod.
Yeah, exactly. Speak to our lawyers. Damn it! This was supposed to be a drunken podcast. Now it's lawyers.
It doesn't happen too often. Usually, I mean, if there's something I'm really excited about, we'll put the effort and the time and the investment to make it. And, you know, if that helps seal the deal, which usually it does, then it's worth the investment. But for this particular case, you know, we had the studio's backing. We had the writer of the film, Back to the Future, Bob Gale is his name. He was excited about it. And it just came down to, you know, the management. It just didn't work out. But at the end of the day, you know, we made an awesome looking figure that, you know, sits on my shelf back here.
Hey, well, now it's a one off, you know.
Yeah. Well, Michael J. Fox has one. I have one, and that's about it.
Well, that's even cooler
in China right now.
That's even
awesome,
cooler.
Dude. That's awesome.
So how does the manufacturing process actually go? So you, I mean, is it? Because I've always heard that it's just an absolute bitch sometimes to try to get some of the manufacturing done. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. So I have a partner over in Hong Kong that handles all of, you know, he'll source the fact. I mean, we work with a number of different factories. So for the beer steins, we have a ceramics factory. For the shakers, we have a stainless steel factory. For the toys, action figures, we have a plastics factory. So you do your drawings, you do your 3D development, everything gets sent to China. They then do sculpts, and it's just a series of different steps to get the actual product finished. And then it goes through the whole licensing side. So you have to get the approval from Lucas and through Disney and through any actors. And when everything's done and finished and done, then you go into production it's about anywhere from 40 to 60 days to manufacture product. And then it's 30 days on the water. And then, you know, then it's in the stores. So it's
that's the
long and the short of it. Anyhow.
The development of everything is what is crazy. I mean, I know just from my products, and I don't have a Michael J. Fox action figure, but
hey, Stuffs Burgers though.
I know. I got Stuffs. I know. That was a great.
Was that your product, or were you the spokesperson?
I endorsed it, dude. I endorsed it. That was it. My my agent gave me a call one day and said, "Hey, Bri, will you?" By the way, what we're talking about is we're talking about a hamburger stuffer that I endorse. It's called Stuffs, S-T-U-F-Z. Feel free to buy multiple of them. You can get them on my website. You can get them anywhere. You can get them at Walmart if you want. But anyway, it was a it came to me. It just came across my desk. My agent called me and said, "Hey, would you be interested in doing this?" And I laughed about it. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do an infomercial. You know, I might endorse it, but I didn't know if I wanted to do an infomercial. And then she said, "Well, here's what they're going to pay you, and this is kind of the deal that we're looking at." And I said, "All right, well, let me play with it and see." And I played with it for like 2 weeks. My kids made stuff. I have two little girls. At that point, they were 10 and 12, I guess. But they played with it. I gave it to friends, and they played with it. I just had a boatload of fun with it, so I decided to endorse it. And then the next thing you know, I flew down to Florida. I shot a four-hour commercial. And for 2.5 minutes of airtime. And I'll never forget the director, who's a great dude, who's actually a good friend, had said to me, "Look, I want you to be yourself, you know, use your own words, be yourself." And then as we started to tape, he said, "This is not just a script. This is more of a scripture." So there's really not a lot of changing. So it was pretty funny. I got to add in some of my own isms, I guess I could call them. But it was really a lot of fun. I mean, my girls really do love like making a mac and cheese stuffed burger. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I did an infomercial too, but unfortunately, it was the product didn't go to launch, and I can't say too much about it. So, but it was interesting. Just doing that infomercial and everything in the filming is very much different, but it's really cool. But it was also interesting to see how much time and money was invested in this to take it to a test market,
yeah,
and realize the product was, there was already products out there that was too much competitors and just no need to bring it out. So that was kind of interesting. Something that no one will see.
I'm scared to ask what that product is, Russell.
What's that?
Yeah.
I'd actually have to talk to my lawyer. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say it, to tell you the truth. That's something I'll have to bring
push
it up on
envelope,
another episode,
Russell.
After I
push the envelope,
my legal.
Dude, you push that envelope. You be a rebel. You fucking mentioned the name of that thing,
Jesus
right now.
Jesus Christ. Listen, there's already one of those voices like in my head. So I
have
to read
the
other one.
You got the...
You're like fucking gangbanging me.
Now it's happening on Skype. Well, no, I mean, it is. It's a tough world because... I mean, I know when I left restaurants before I got into the consulting side, I went into a development side. And there, you know, every time you come up with a new product or something new, it's a pain in the ass. I mean, it takes forever to get it done. I worked for a company. I made frozen seafood products for almost every major grocery store chain in the world. It was awesome. It was a blast. I had a lot of fun doing it for the first like 3 weeks. And then it got to a point that I was within 3 months of me being with this company, I was 9 months ahead of schedule, dude.
Bam.
And production couldn't keep up. I was constantly cranking out new ideas for things, and they just couldn't keep up with what I was trying to get done. So I ended up quitting because the owner was an asshole and all that stuff. But it was, I mean, it was crazy, man. And watching the way that it takes to get the product from, you know, from the concept all the way into the development of it, over to, you know, actually the manufacturing of it. It's a pain in the ass, man. It's almost disheartening at times as a creative person to watch it stop.
And that doesn't even include all the work you've had to put into your professional career to even be able to develop a name where they'll even listen to you or want to do something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. It's true. It's the truth, man. It's a major, it's totally true. So,
Brandon, what, you know, are there any like brands or things out there that you haven't sunk your teeth into that you just really want to see happen that, you know?
Well, I'm really having fun with the barware items right now, and we're going to continue to develop that. We're in talks with a number of different licensors to develop product for this coming holiday.
I know this guy. He used to be a bartender.
Oh boy.
That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay. Oh, gotcha. Yeah, so there, I mean, who knows? There's a lot of stuff that I'm interested in. As long as it's just a fun, I mean, our motto is we make cool shit. And
yeah.
I recently changed that on my website because I did some work for the Christian Broadcasting Network. So it's now we make cool stuff. But
yeah,
a certain thing. But yeah, we make cool stuff, and it's like. If there's something fun, unique, innovative, different than the average product that's out there, can be a toy, could be a shaker, could be a beer sign, anything. that's what really piques my interest. I want to do something, you know, fun, unique, and functional are kind of the three things that I look for when I'm developing a new product. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun though. So
I love it.
Good time, definitely.
So Duffy, I you know, and the world has not seen the comic book yet, although it should be coming out around this episode. I let you see the comic book, the first run of it, the first edition without the ads and the back cover and everything. And what did you think so far?
Of the cartoon?
You being a comic book man.
Oh,
the Road Rash comic.
You're talking to me, right?
Yeah, Brandon.
Yeah, I thought it was cool, man. And I think Maggie's the name of your artist?
Yes.
Yeah, Maggie, yeah, your artist.
She is uber talented. She is great. And I feel bad for her because I know she's working probably 23 hours out of the day sketching these all the guests and characters and everything.
Dude, she's amazing, man.
The comic was great, man. I thought it was cool. I like seeing the... I don't want to give too much away, but I like the backstory of you guys and you know, the shadowy figure and the darkness and all that kind of stuff.
Right away, that's not Bob the Enforcer, I'll have you know.
Yeah. But it was cool, man. I think it's really cool of you guys to do. It's you know, it's a very innovative thing to do within this. It's different, you know. No one's doing a comic that ties in with a podcast, and I think my hat's off to you.
We're trying not to talk too much about it. We don't want anybody to know, because
just in case it drops out.
Just in case, I have a feeling Joe Rogan's going to be rolling in pretty soon with a comic showing up. You know, of him just cursing philosophically throughout the world.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that, because it's something that's personally very exciting for me, being a comic book nerd, and I'm just trying to figure out how to go to Comic-Con professionally.
Let's do it, man. It'll be in July. I'll meet you there.
That would be a blast.
It was actually one of the reasons Russell is a huge comic guy and a huge toy guy and all that stuff. I like Harleys, but he's a huge comic guy. And when he first called me, I mean, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, wasn't it, dude?
Yeah, it was one of those late night calls.
I know, but the first part, I think it was 1 o'clock in the morning for you, which meant it was like four me.
For you, yeah.
So, and this was the night. This is the night that Russell was out tweeting #. I fucking love Duffy. That was what was going on at that moment in time. I remember Russell, and the excitement was so. He's like, dude, I just want to go to Comic-Con. I think it would be really cool if we could pair this up. He's like, I met this illustrator, and I was like, all right, dude, whatever, man. You know, I mean, I Russell's got a great brain, and I trust 98% of what he says we should do. You know, so I mean,
trust. That's funny, because I only trust 90% of what my brain says.
Nice, so, good, yeah. Good. I'm optimistic.
Watch out for that 8% deviation.
Yeah, but it is. It's really kind of cool, and it's a little bit aggressive. Which I love. I mean, that's the way that this is. I mean, it's a Road Rash, so rock and roll.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. And once we start dropping it in different languages, that's going to be pretty exciting. So,
yeah, we're talking Japanese and everything. Comic,
when's it going to come out?
The 26th.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yep. We'll be in Reno.
Yeah, we'll be on a plane going to Reno. I'll be landing because I'm an overachiever, and Duffy will be getting in later and probably getting a mani-pedi and making fun of my toys.
Yeah, fucking right I will. Absolutely, dude. This is vacation day one, right? No, I'm leaving my children at home for this. I do this, and then I go to Mohegan Sun Wine Festival that weekend, and then I got to go to Real Screen in D.C. right after. So, yeah. But all right, so Brandon, I got a couple questions for you. One, what's your favorite thing to eat, man?
Favorite thing to eat? Oh, boy.
Let's do what's your favorite thing to eat at home?
At home?
Yeah. Where you're either going to cook or your fiance's cooking.
I actually make a mean jambalaya.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
Big into spicy. I like the gumbos, the jambalaya, all that kind of stuff. Anything with meat. If it doesn't have meat in it, then it's an appetizer or whatever.
I'm the same way. I'm the same way.
Dude, I was a vegetarian for 6 months on a bet.
Were you really?
Yeah, my ex-girlfriend who was who's a, I always talk about her and I always have the same saying. She's a wonderful human being because she really is a rock star. She bet me that I couldn't be a vegetarian, so I was a vegetarian for 6 months. And on the last day of the sixth month, I landed in Dallas, Texas. And I immediately, I didn't even go to the hotel. Russell, I was speaking with Taffer for Rescue Tour. And I walked, I got in a car, I got an Uber, and I immediately went to Lockhart Smokehouse and had
one of the best places ever.
One of the best places ever. And I got like a whole package. Like I think I left with a box. Like most people leave with like a brown bag. I left with a box. I went back to my hotel and I gorged myself on barbecue from Lockhart. And then I threw up for roughly 6 to 8 hours because I hadn't had protein in my stomach for 6 months. But yeah, man, I'm a, I love, I actually really enjoyed being a vegetarian. I will say that.
Not me, man. I will dance around a fire naked, primal style, just eating meat off the bone with my teeth.
Russell, remember when you said you needed 3 minutes because you had to go to the bathroom earlier? Can I tell you what I was doing?
What was that?
I was eating 3 ribs upstairs in the kitchen. That's why I said I needed 8 minutes. I did. I got some ribs from the farmer's market yesterday. I heated those bitches up. I dipped them in a little sauce, and I was eating the ribs while you were peeing.
I got a question for you, Duffy.
Yeah.
So, cheesesteaks, man. I've been to Philly once. Okay. And I did the same thing with...
Ooh, I like this. I like where this is going.
I didn't go anywhere, really, outside of... You know, I had like 2-hour layover. So, I went straight in a car, went straight to, you know, Geno's and Pat's. Okay. I had a full Philly at each place. Not, there you go. You know, had a full one. But in L.A., man, what's the deal with pizza sauce? Is that something that...
No, get the fuck out of here. No.
What's that about? They said that this is a out here, they have a number of places that are supposed to be authentic Philly cheesesteaks, and they put marinara sauce on.
No, that's not it. An authentic cheesesteak is very, very simple. It's actually a sliced ribeye, okay? You can have it with two different types of cheese. Well, you can have it with any type of cheese you want, but a true Philly is with either provolone American or Whiz. Okay, and the funny part is actually not called a Philly. We don't call them Phillies. Everybody else in the world does. We call them cheesesteaks because that's what they are. They're cheesesteaks. But a lot of people call them a Philly. There's never a green pepper to be seen in the same block as a cheesesteak. Okay, it's not there. And everybody tries to put green peppers on things for some reason. But all it is it's shaved roast beef that's cooked down. I like mine wit, which means you're going to get it with onions. And then I also like to add mushrooms into mine. And then every now and then I'll do the hot cherry peppers that they leave outside in the bacteria-laden sun for the entire day. They're perfect at 3 a.m. But if you're going to come to Philly, then my suggestion is very simple. You're going to go and you have to do Pat's and Geno's, but you have to do them together. Because that's really that's the history.
Yeah.
And then from there, I would end up either going over to the Italian market, which is 9th and Catherine, 9th and Christian, right in there, 9th and Washington, in that little area, where you can walk in and you go to George's Roast Pork Sandwich, and you get a roast pork sandwich with broccoli rabe, with Italian sausage, with aged provolone, with sweets and hots on it, and that's like the prime sandwich. That's my sandwich that I get. I just shot a TV show and we did that. But the best cheesesteak in Philly, in my opinion, is actually not in Philadelphia. It's on Belmont Avenue in Ballykinwood, and it's a place called Mama's Pizza.
Really?
And I will ship you one. I'm going to send you a package anyway, dude, because I want you to have a stuffs and an apron and some spice and stuff. So I'll ship some fun, and I've got great T-shirts and all that. I've got cool hats, and but I'll ship you a fun little package. And in there, I'm going to put a cheesesteak from Mama's.
Better make it 2 cheesesteaks, and I'll swing by Brandon.
All right, that's fine. No, because you know what? And I'm not kidding you, dude. A half of a cheesesteak is this big.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's only about this long.
Wait,
but it's
how big?
Russell, I forgot Russell's not on camera. Russell, it's about 4 to 6 inches long, and the roll itself is probably 5 inches in diameter.
Gotcha.
And it's just loaded with great meat and great cheese. It's a great, great sandwich, and I can't talk about it enough. It's just a great sandwich. So, yeah.
Well, I'm gonna return the favor by sending you some beer steins, man.
Absolutely, I love it. I love it. See, Russell, what are you gonna send? Where's your developed product?
My love. I'm gonna spread my love.
Russell's just gonna keep dropping belt buckles off.
It's not often that I'm talking to renowned chef and mixologist. So, hey, Russell, what's the deal? You know I'm a whiskey guy.
Oh,
what's
the
deal between like half the bars that I go to out here?
Uh-huh.
you know, I know Manhattan comes with the Luxardo cherries, but half the old fashions that I order come with cherries. Half of them don't. Are you supposed to have a cherry in an old fashioned?
Well, traditionally, no. Back in the day, in the oldest school, old fashioned style of the drink, which the old fashioned is the name of a cocktail, but back in the early 1800s, it was referring to the old fashioned style of making a cocktail, which the definition of cocktail, sugar, water, spirit, bitters. And you're talking about early 1800s was when the definition came out, and then really old fashions were kind of popular back in the 1860s, even before and even after as well. But back then, what they would normally do was actually a lemon peel. Lemon peel and rye whiskey was generally the old fashioned in the way you do it. So it'd be sugar, water, rye whiskey, bitters, and then a lemon peel over ice. And then, you know, people started transitioning into the orange peel, adding a cherry. But the old fashioned in its most old fashioned style is a lemon peel.
There we go. Right.
Good to know.
There we go.
See, I come with the questions too, guys.
I know. That's awesome, dude. That's the way it should be. So where's your favorite place to eat while you're out when you're in LA?
Yeah.
You live in LA, right?
Yeah, I'm in Marina Del Rey.
Okay, my brothers are Culver City.
Oh, yeah, right down the street. Man.
Yeah, they own a production company called Ugly Brothers Studios. Plug.
Ugly Brothers.
Nice. I was wondering what that was. I saw that on your website. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Dude, this guy does research, Russell.
I know. He's scary.
I'm still trying to figure out how to spell B.
I think he's one of us.
I know he is.
What favorite places to eat, man? I don't know, man.
Moe's is hella good.
Moe's has some good food in it.
Bar food.
I like El Cholo for Mexican food.
Absolutely. My brother had his El Cholo. Is that the inside? They make the tortillas right in the dining room. Is that El Cholo?
There's El Cholo and La Cabana is another one, they're both good Mexican restaurants.
One of those my brother had his rehearsal dinner at.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Did you like it?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I was just kind of making a point. I forgot we were on air. So I reached over to grab a drink of my coffee. Yeah, dude, I loved it. I mean, I can't remember the name of the place that I go to every time that I'm there. It's right on La Cienega. Is that right?
Sienega.
I can't remember. I don't know. I'll find out, and I'll let everybody know probably in another episode. But it's like you pull up. There's a valet right out front. You walk in and it's just like a dark and dingy Mexican And then there's a woman in the back who's making the tortillas on the press. Like there it is right there. That's the place that I always go to that I love. They've got great food. So I'm a big fan.
What are a couple of the go tos for you when you're out here?
I'll tell you what, dude, Brendan Collins places were Waterloo and City was my favorite.
Yeah. That's Brendan's awesome.
I know they just switched hands. It's called like the Axe or something like that now.
Yeah. He sold that. He closed it and he opened up a new place. I can't remember. I don't know where his new place is. I think it's a little bit more casual, but I'm not 100% sure. I know Brendan's been just completely nuts. So when I'm out there, and then I have to say, man, and call me crazy or call me just, you know, whatever, nepotism, Nick Liberato's place, Venezuela, is just crushing it.
I haven't been there for food yet, so I'm excited. I was listening to the podcast. I haven't, since he's taken it over, I haven't been out there. But it looks great, man. I'm going to go check it out. I'm literally like two blocks from there. So.
Oh, do you have to? Just go in and tell Nick. Tell Nick that you're a friend of ours, please. Because
yeah.
One, Nick, he's going to hug you first, probably. You know, I mean, he's just a great guy, and he'll put you up on the deck where you just watch the sunset, and his food is just off the hook. It's just unbelievable what he creates. So, you know, for never really being truly like classically trained and all that stuff, and not that you need that, but he's just an awesome chef, and he really, his passion is so deep, and he's so spiritual with everything. Go in and check it out, dude.
And it makes the food taste better knowing you're supporting such a great guy.
But you should see him run his kitchen. I mean, he's literally like Big Papa.
I just show up this afternoon. I'll be like, "Hey guys."
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He showed a picture of this morning of his girlfriend, his wife who's pregnant, and he wrote last family selfie of just three. So I don't know if the baby's due this week or if she's due next week. But he's having a baby, so
Wow.
Yeah, he's, you know, I mean, I just can't speak highly enough about Nick as a person and as a chef. It's to watch him work is, it's like watching an artist, man. You know, and the way he works with his staff and how respectful he is to them. And as he said to me, when I did my walkthrough, he looked at me and he's like, dude, you used to be able to get a burger out of this window and an 8-ball. So for those of you who don't know what an 8-ball is, it's a drug. It's an illegal narcotic. It's called cocaine.
Yeah. It's actually a measurement of drugs.
Yeah.
No, it's a lot. It's gone through a big overhaul from what I've seen, just walking on the beach and being around that neighborhood. So.
Yeah. Dude, stop in. Absolutely. I will, definitely. Yeah. He's a good guy. So where's your favorite city?
Man, I love Chicago. Excellent. If it was
great city.
Love Chicago. I'm a big blues. I love the blues music. I love the food. I love everything about Chicago, except for the weather.
But dude, the spring when you're walking that Miracle Mile and they've got they plant everything along that mile and all the tulips are coming up and all the flowers. It's such an awesome city. Where do you eat?
Usually I chow down. I've only been to Chicago a few times, but Gino's East for pizza is one of my favorites. I love it out there. I like New York too. I'm going to New York in a couple weeks for Toy Fair. So yeah.
Next time you're going to Chicago.
Might have to introduce him to the cider mistress.
Oh yeah, Danielle Von Scheiner.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to that part yet. You guys recorded that today, right?
We did that yesterday. Yeah, she's going to be on. She's on tonight. So she's on. Well, yeah, tonight's episode. Just so everybody knows, we record this portion of it sometimes a week ahead. So everybody knows, the mystique is gone.
Sorry, guys.
The mystique is gone. Brandon ruined that for us. Danielle's awesome, and then he's also got to try to hook up with Eric if Eric's out there. I'm looking at Russell like he's going to respond to me on the computer, but it's just a very sexy picture of him with a bottle of booze in his hand on train tracks. That's all I see. Oh, I got to take a picture. I got to take a picture because I'll tweet that out. So everybody knows what the fuck I'm talking about.
Just sitting on some train tracks, drinking some whiskey like I always do.
Exactly. Yeah, it's because last time I had whiskey on train tracks, I was actually vertical. I was laying or horizontal.
Waiting on my next. My next order from Amazon of belt buckles and exactly. Trying to fight that voice in the back of my head telling me to be a rebel.
47 of them.
Full circle, Russell.
Brandon, dude, when you go to Chicago, please let me know. A very, very good friend of mine is the head of the Illinois Restaurant Association.
Okay.
So she will totally take care of you, and they're really, really great people to know. And then when you go to Chicago, you got to go into Snickers.
Snickers. I haven't heard of that one.
Right up. Look up Snickers. It's the greatest dive bar around. Okay. It literally, there's like five super hot smoking Russian models who literally will look at you and like fire will come out of their eyes because you're asking them for a drink. Because the last thing they want to do is talk to you unless you're just like, I don't even know, man. They just hate you. And then there's a guy, an old man.
But it turns you on in a weird way.
Oh, in such a crazy way. So hard. Yeah. So sorry. So excited. But the funny part about it is there's a guy behind the counter and you can order like a gyro, and the machine is never on and it just sits there like in the Chicago weather and just sits there. And then he walks over and like slices down on it. He kind of looks at you, like smirks a little bit and then drops it on the flat top and it's just bacteria everywhere. Oh, it's so bad, but I hear they're good. So rock and roll, have fun. Snickers is good.
Wrote that down.
Yeah. There's another bar about two blocks down. I'll tell you the name. I think it's called McCoy's. It's about two blocks down, and the woman's name is Susan, who works in there. She's about 75 years old. And the last time I was in there, I walked into the bar. It was about 3 a.m. I was with a really good buddy of mine, and I ordered my Grey Goose and soda with 3 olives and a lime. And the woman looks at me, and I'm not kidding you. She puts her finger up and looks at me like I'm a fucking maniac. And she walks away, and she gets my buddy's beer, and she comes back down. She sets it down. She looks on either side of the bar. She looks at me and said, "Now, what the fuck do you want?" And I was like, I'll have a beer instead. And she's like, no, what did you order from me? And I'm like, a Grey Goose and soda with 3 olives and a lime. And she's like, that sounds fucking disgusting, and turned around and walked away and made my drink, and that was it. So I felt like shit. Yeah, I was made to feel like shit. So I don't know. All right. So, Brandon, how can we get in touch with you, dude? How can we follow you and you know, what you're doing and where you're going to get your next cheesesteak?
Beeline Creative. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. And then, yeah, my website, BelineCreative.com. You see all the fun stuff that we're doing. All the barware, the action figures, and all that good shit.
Cool, man. I have some clients up in north of San Francisco that own a bar called the Seven Stars Bar and Grill. So they are massive Star Wars fanatics. They've both got tats all across their bodies, the whole nine yards. They do Star Wars themed nights, the whole nine yards. So I'm going to have to get these guys in touch with you.
Those are my people, man.
For some of those signs. Yeah, they're really wonderful. They're a great couple. Paul and Maria are their names. They're really, really good people. So I'll definitely get them in contact with you. So that's pretty cool, man.
Awesome.
Yeah. Russell, you got anything else, my friend?
No, man. Besides, Brandon, thanks for coming on. I'll have to come by the shop again soon, and we'll make some cocktails next time.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed out because I was going to put Russell to work, man. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, screw this coffee. I want these craft cocktails, man. Yeah,
where's Bartender of the Year now? I didn't ask for a barista. Get the apron off.
In an old-fashioned at 10 in the morning is beautiful.
Exactly. But, hey, no, I appreciate you guys having me on. I love what you're doing, and you got a fan, and I'm going to check out the rest of your podcasts and all that good stuff.
Well, thanks so much, Brandon. It's been such a pleasure, brother.
All right, brother. Good seeing you out here. And Mr. Brian Duffy, pleasure meeting you.
Absolutely. What I'm going to do, I'm going to reach out to you. I'm going to get your address. I'll send out a little package for you so you can have some fun. And I sent a package to my attorney the other day, and he responded with a picture of him standing in his living room with my apron on, holding his stuffs in one hand, with a spice in the other hand, wearing my hat and the T-shirt on underneath of everything. So it was pretty good, man. I love watching what people do.
So you're going to have to do that. So.
I got the
Awesome. All right. Well, Brandon, dude, thank you so much, man. It was nice talking to you, and I'm hoping we can get some business going with us all and have a little bit of fun at the same time, dude.
Fingers crossed, buddy. All
thanks.
Right,
thanks, brother. Take care. So I'm chatting at a Mohegan Sun Wine Festival with Chef Fred Huhn, who's here to talk to us about my two questions that I'm asking every chef. The worst night you've ever had in or out of a kitchen, and the best night you've ever had in or out of a kitchen.
Hi guys, I'm Fred Huhn, banquet chef at Mohegan Sun. Sometimes the best and the worst come together in the same event. So one comes to mind is did a Todd English Louis Vuitton event in Boston. High-end food, beautiful people, beautiful food, great food, awesome night, but also turned a little sloppy towards the end, which lost cell phones, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, Jesus.
Other great nights, maybe the first 600-plus cover night, and I work at a Todd English in Tuscany, 150 grill specials solo. Worst nights, probably anything where all, you know, and anything and everything that can go wrong does.
Yeah.
And those ones you kind of black out and you just don't really remember them too clearly.
You throw them away.
Yeah.
Away. All right, so here's my last question. I was thinking about this while we were talking. What do you, I mean, because of your volume and what you do, what do you find to be the key to success for the perfect shift or the perfect scenario in a kitchen at any point?
Well, as most chefs know, it's all about the preparation, the mise en place. If you got everything squared away, things go smooth. If anything unexpected happens, you're able to deal with it. Versus when you're in the weeds from the get-go, it tends to be a terrible experience.
There you go, dude. Cheers, man. Rock and roll. So, talking to Brian Rail, who's here. What's the name of your restaurant?
Citizen Public House and Oyster Bar.
There you go. I didn't understand that. Did you understand that?
Citizen Public House and Oyster Bar.
There we go. We got that. So here's the question. Worst night and best night you've ever had in a kitchen?
Worst night ever was when I was a line cook in Aujourd'hui, five-star, five-dime restaurant, and I was putting up like a 35-plate pickup, and I broke my beurre blanc, and I tried to like skate through, and when it got to the chef, he was not very happy at all. I basically smashed all my plates, and it was kind of a disaster.
Nice.
The best night I've ever had in the kitchen? That's hard to say. It's probably like, I would say, happiest night opening. Actually, I want to go back to worst night. Worst night ever is when we opened Tasty Burger. That was fucking terrible. That sucked. That trumps it for sure. Best night ever was probably Hard to say. Just, you know what? Probably opening Citizen because it was the smoothest opening.
Right.
And just having fun with it and not really having to stress as hard as the other ones.
Nice, dude. Yeah. And then my last question is, what do you think it is that makes a kitchen run successfully?
The inverted orangutan.
The inverted orangutan.
Yeah, Google it.
Google it. All right, we're Googling inverted orangutan. That's what my brother's saying. So give me all your stuff, social media, whatever you got.
Yeah, dude, Brian, check me out. Brian Railt at Facebook or Brian _ Railt at Instagram. Brian Railt at Railt, B Railt at Twitter.
Got it. Cool. Thanks, brother.
Hey, guys, this is Chef Kevin, Kevin DeShane from Table 3 Restaurant Group just outside of Boston, Mass.
Twitter, Instagram, any of that stuff?
Twitter is at ChefKevD, and my website is ChefKevD.com.
Perfect. All right. So we're at Mohegan Sun Wine Festival, and I'm asking the question to all the guys. The best night you've had in or out of a kitchen,
no matter what it is. I'm going to stick with a kitchen question here because it's the first thing that comes to mind. I just did a pop-up a couple months ago with a bunch of my chef friends. Got my whole crew out of the kitchen, my normal day-to-day crew, and had a bunch of chefs that I work with all over the country all came in. And we just cooked a bunch of broke down some animals. We cooked all night. And the crowd loved it. And it was just probably one of the best nights I've had in the restaurant, in the kitchen.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was the best dish you did that night, do you think?
Let's see. Let me think back. I did a play on these pumpkin fritters, but we did it with a panna cotta, and it was the fall, so it was perfect. The pumpkin, and the panna cotta, it was perfect. What else did we do? Some short ribs that we braised 6 hours. You know, that I had some brisket here last night. That was good.
The stuff that was here was unbelievable last night.
The bourbon tasting.
I was bare.
Yeah.
You know, he's a competition eater.
It was amazing.
Yeah. That's how he opened his first restaurant.
You know, you just expect finger foods and stuff like that, but you show up and there's whole briskets and bacon wrapped everything. It was awesome.
He was talking about bacon wrapped meatballs all night last night.
I saw them. Yeah, they were good.
It was good. It was good. Well, cool, brother.
All right, man.
Thanks, dude. That's it. Simple and basic.
I'll see you all weekend.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Hi, this is Chris Coombs, chef and owner of Duwab Boston Chops and D-Bar Restaurants in Boston, Massachusetts. Find me on social media at Chris Coombs on Twitter and Instagram.
Cool. All right, so Chef and I are at the Mohegan Sun Wine Festival. And as you guys all know, for the last couple of days, I've been interviewing chefs, asking them a couple of quick questions. And so here's the question. Very simple. Give me the worst and or the best night that you've ever had in a kitchen.
Sure. So the best night I've ever had in a kitchen is actually really simple. I'm really big on sentimental value, and a couple years ago it was great to take my entire team to cook at the James Beard House in New York. You know, it was such an honor to cook there where so many other awesome chefs have cooked. It was actually my 7th time cooking in the Beard House, but the most recent dinner was really special because I was able to bring so many of my chef de cuisines from Boston Urban Hospitality and really give them their first chance to cook at the Beard House. And any chef you talk to, they never forget their first time, but this most recent time was the most special. You know, we sold out the Beard House. We had a wait list of 100 people waiting to get a ticket, and we put out some spectacular food and really just blew everyone out of the water, and it was a super special night.
Awesome, man.
Now, on the other side of things, if you want to talk about the worst night I've ever had in a kitchen, there was a Friday not too long ago where, you know, we're cooking at Duwab. It's 7:30 on a Friday night. It's real busy. One of my chef happens to cut themselves early on in the night, heads to the emergency room. Sure enough, about an hour and a half later, health inspector shows up for a surprise inspection at 7:30. And let me tell you, 7:30 on a Friday night is not a normal time for a restaurant to have a health inspection. So in the middle of putting out service, I had to find a way to entertain the health inspector for an hour and a half. And it was one of the most challenging nights of my professional career, not only to put out 180 covers shorthanded, not having my sous chef, but also having to entertain a health inspector that had absolutely no idea the stress and the constraints that we were under. But when the city shows up, you better be ready for them, you know. And that's the fun part about this business, is that you got to be ready for everything. But, you know, the team really came together, pushed everything out. We made everyone happy that night. But, man, was it a crazy, crazy night.
Awesome. Love it, man. Love it. All right, Chef, so I got one final question for you. And, you know, you're so successful with what you do. And you know, from my angle of looking at things, I love watching what you do. Very, very talented. Your demos are awesome. Your food is beautiful. You know, I look at your staff that comes with you and does stuff with you. They've all got big smiles on their faces. There's something to be said about a chef's staff that looks at them, at the chef that way. What do you attribute your success to have your staff as successful as they are?
Sure. You know, in my mind, I think this is a deep-rooted question. And I think what it comes down to is it's all about the team. You know, as owner of a business with 125 employees, I'm not fooling anyone by telling them that I do it all myself. It's just not possible. So I think it's important to hire well, train well, surround yourself with people that you want to be around, and then spread a culture. You know, and the culture at Boston Urban Hospitality is that we're all there for the same reason. We love what we do, and we want to give our guests the best possible experience possible from the time that they walk into our door, from the time that they leave us. And we really preach that culture daily, you know, and it goes into everything that we do. We try and set ourselves up to give people an experience. You know, a lot of people say that they're in the food business. I'm in the experience business. And when you come to a Boston Urban Hospitality restaurant, you're going to feel that from the moment you're greeted to dealing with our service staff, and then when you have visits from our chefs. And culturally, it's something that I think is contagious. You know, I think that when you promote a healthy, happy work environment where people are making good money and treated well, it's a place that they want to be, and it's a place that they'll stay with you for a longer time. And, you know, we came up in this business. It was a very different world. We were treated very poorly, lots of long hours, low wages. And I think that the modern chef has to be a little bit smarter and take a much better and more responsible approach to how they treat their team. And I always say team and not staff, because I think it really is a team sport, cooking and service and all the fundamentals that go along with a perfect guest experience, which, you know, it's an interesting thing. Perfection in restaurants, it's a total myth. It's not attainable. Some, you know, we chase it all the time, but we really try and push ourselves to improve upon what it is that we do on a daily basis, and that's striving for excellence in all three restaurants, whether it's Duav, Boston Chops, or D-Bar, is what keeps us humble, it keeps us focused, and it keeps us passionate about our craft, and that's why we do what we do, and I'm really, really proud of my whole team and what we've accomplished together, and I look forward to what's to come.
That's awesome, man. I got one more for you, because you kind of brought it up about the idea of the experience. One of my big things I always say is, you know, it's about exceeding the guest expectation. They have an expectation when they're walking in, and it's our job to go above and beyond that. But what are your thoughts? I've been talking a lot over the last couple of weeks about everything that's going on with Per Se right now, and how they're kind of reacting. We haven't really heard much from Chef Keller at all, with the exception of a really nice email that he put out, a blast that he put out. What do you think the next step is when that happens?
Sure. Well, I just want to say, you know, Chef Thomas Keller, he's a class act. And I think that his response on social media was, I couldn't have written a more appropriate response if he gave me 100 tries. I think it really hit a lot of notes. I think, you know, as chefs, we're going to have good reviews and we're going to have bad reviews. And the bad reviews, or the less than desirable reviews, we should say, you know, it's sometimes a tough pill to swallow, but I think he was really responsible. He owned up to it. I think Per Se is going to end up being a better restaurant than it ever was as a result of this criticism. But I also think it's a unique position for Chef Keller to be able to respond. I know one of the things that I was envious of is, you know, as a chef, I've had a lot of great reviews, and I've had a couple that I didn't necessarily agree with. And, you know, as a lesser-known chef, or lesser-known chefs, we very rarely have the opportunity to respond to our review publicly and have it gain any sort of traction, or to even dispute certain facts that may have been in the review itself. But one of the things that I learned is that, you know, Chef Keller really took it like a passionate professional, and I've heard, you know, from friends who are involved in his group that, you know, they're going to be trying even harder on a daily basis, because expectations are relative. You know, if you and I go out for pizza at 2 in the morning, our expectations might be a little bit lower than if we're spending $700 a person. But one of the things that we focus on is, whether you're a D-Bar, which is a bistro, or Chops, which is a steakhouse, or Duav, we're always trying to exceed the expectations that you come in with. And that can vary from person to person. And, you know, Pete Wells has dined in the finest of restaurants in New York. And, you know, Per Se has seen a restaurant scene in New York mature around them almost overnight. And stylistically, the type of restaurant that Per Se is, you know, the type of restaurant that is a dying breed currently. And I think it's really remarkable that Chef Keller doesn't change the restaurant, that he stays with his standards, he stays with his vision, he stays focused on what he believes in. And I think that other chefs might, you know, run up and down the food chain of their restaurant and perhaps get rid of some of their staff. But from what I've heard, Chef Keller stood by his staff, and he's more focused than ever than making sure his team has the tools to succeed. And I'm excited to go back and dine at Per Se in the near future.
That's awesome. Chef, thank you so much, man. I really do appreciate it. You know, having you hanging out with you the last couple of days is always fun. I look forward to next year, man. Thank you very much, dude. Seriously, I appreciate it. All right, so here we go. Now we got Jamie McDonald, also known as the Bear, who owns Bear's Barbecue up here in Connecticut. You have two spots up here?
Yeah, one in Hartford, one in Windsor.
One in Hartford and one in
Windsor.
In Windsor. All right. So, Jamie, I'm just going to ask you simple. Best night ever in a kitchen or out of a kitchen?
Go. The night I met my wife.
Nice! By the way, Jamie's wife is directly next to us. We're going to ask her the same question and see if they match up.
I would say the best moment is when we started our opening day of our restaurant. It changed our lives. It was about 3 years ago, and I wouldn't be here today without it.
Okay. So that's in the kitchen or out of the kitchen?
I say that's in the kitchen.
Okay. Out of the kitchen.
Out of the kitchen is, I would say seriously, the day we met. It was in Montreal.
There you go.
At a place called Church Hills.
You're both getting teary-eyed.
Way too young.
No, way too young.
I am.
No, you're getting teary-eyed.
And
it's Church Hills.
Again, without her, we wouldn't be where we are today. I'd probably be in a gutter somewhere.
There we go. There we go. Another chef who comes right back to passion. It's where it all starts, my friends. Jamie, can you give me your information?
Yeah, so it's Jamie McDonald, Eat Bear Eat on Twitter, and The Barbecue Bear on Instagram.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. So the greatest night you've ever had, either in a kitchen or out of a kitchen, go.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm Michelle Regusses. Chef Michelle on Instagram. The greatest night, I'm going to say, well, I'm going to put in a kitchen, and I made a scallop dish that a woman actually stopped me and said, I never, ever stop talking. Nothing shuts me up, and this bite of food you just made, it was a scallop dish, shut me up and took me into a whole nother world. And that was my greatest food night.
And what was the dish?
It was a seared scallop over a basil cream corn with crispy prosciutto. Really slim, simple.
There you go.
But, I mean, I it blew her mind for some reason. So
sometimes they just want simplistic.
I think simplistic.
All right,
the way
so you
go.
Gave us the greatest night in a kitchen. Now what's the greatest night out of a kitchen? Because I can't just stop it there.
Greatest night out of a kitchen, all right, I'm not going to name any names.
You don't have to.
Is when I
Protect
met a super hot, sexy girl in a bar, of course.
Tell us
in
more.
Bar, in a bar. I took her back to my home.
How you doing?
How you doing? I had to go on a 7-day cruise the next day, which sucked, after the night we had. And then I had to leave. And it was probably one of the best encounters I had with a girl.
Have you spoken to that person since?
Yeah, now, friggin', she's my best friend, and we broke up.
All right.
Typical lesbian relationships. We're all friends.
All right, so the best night in the kitchen ended up being with a scallop dish, and the best night out of a kitchen ended up being with a super sexy, sexy dirty bird.
Yes.
In a town in New England.
In a town in New England.
Michelle Regusses, thank you so much for your love.
Ryan Duff, thanks for
Cheers.
Having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right, here we go.
My name is Adrienne Mosier. I am chef de cuisine of Duave for Boston Urban Hospitality.
All right, guys, last chef of the whole weekend from Sun Wine Festival. Talking to Adrienne Mosier, who is here. She's the chef de cuisine for Duab in Boston. We heard from Chris Coombs earlier, so I'm kind of excited to see the difference between what you guys had to say. So my question for every chef is very simple. What is the best and or worst night you've ever had in a kitchen?
You know, honestly, chef, I think your best and worst nights are every day you walk through the kitchen. It's either gonna be your best or your worst. There's very little gray area in a kitchen. It's like you either perform and the food comes out perfect and beautiful and every guest is just in love with what's happening in your kitchen, or the whole night's a tragedy. Because if one person's not happy, it's like you didn't show up for work that day.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. All right, here's the last one. Now, here's the last thing. You guys run an unbelievable operation. It's something that I've always loved watching what you guys do and the food and the style. And I watch from far. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm not from Boston. But, you know, I watch you guys when you come up here and how you guys work together and everything. What is it that makes your kitchen so successful?
You know, I think a kitchen is all about the team that you have. And, you know, as a chef de cuisine, my job is to build that team, to really find young talent, young chefs who need to spend 3 years in a kitchen before they master it. It's like, that's the talent that you want walking through your door. Just like raw energy, drive, willingness to work. It's like, that's what we hire for. And those are your employees who stay with you a long time. Those are the employees that you can build better and better food year after year. Keep your guests guessing as to what's going to come up on next year's Valentine's Day menu, because it better be better than last year's Valentine's Day menu. You know, and it's really like they are the core of any restaurant. You can't do it without a full team.
Okay, so I'm going to keep going with that if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so talking about employees and you know, we talk daily these days as chefs about how hard it is to find good talent. What are you doing to find good talent now? And what are you doing to retain them, to keep them interested in what it is that you're doing?
You know, this is one of the biggest issues that we have is hiring. And, you know, Chef Chris and Boston Urban Hospitality, you know, we sit down, we really brainstorm, you know, think tank sessions about this exact, like, discussion. And Chef Chris came up with this brilliant plan. So we have a tuition reimbursement program for kids exactly, like, right out of culinary school. It's designed for line cook positions that kids who have $40,000 to $100,000 in debt from 4 to 2 years of school, they just can't afford to take these jobs that are really what they need to grow their career, to start and have a good base and be able to, like, be the best chef, you know, in the nation, which is what everybody's going for, right? It's like, I want to be the best. And for that, you know, we really try to provide the financial support that talent, that, like, hungry cook really needs. So, you know, it's based on how long you stay with the restaurant. The longer you stay, the more of your student loans are paid every month. It's an amazing program. You know, we've had, like, great response to it, and we're really, you know, it's like we're really looking forward to finding those cooks who are going to be the next generation chefs in this nation, helping them build and grow their careers.
That's cool. That's cool. So, Chef, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming out and chatting with us, and I look forward to seeing you guys next year again. So much fun, this event, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk. So thank you very much.
You know, everybody, Road Rash doesn't just happen on its own. It's not like Russell and I sit around and just kind of talk on the phone. We have a group of people that we work with that are really, really important to us to make sure that this stuff goes forward, okay? So I want to thank some of my people, the people that I work really closely with to get this done. One is obviously we want to thank CBD Solution, which is my company. I do a boatload of consulting and all that stuff. Feel free to contact me if that's something that you're interested in, between menus, between recipe development, between staff improvement, staff morale. I do finance. I do the whole nine yards. Me and my crew can do pretty much anything that you need to have done within your space. All right, that's a huge part for us. I really want to thank Techno Solution. Techno Solution takes care of all of our website. Michelle, who's over there, does a tremendous job. She also handles all of my graphic design for my companies as well as a boatload of my restaurants. We want to thank Relax Just Create, because without those guys, there's no possible way for us to get this done at all. Relax Just Create is our branding firm. They handle all of our social media in regards to getting it set up for us and doing that
that sort of stuff. We do as much of our own tweeting and Instagram and Facebook and posts and all that we can. Relax really is there behind us, behind the scenes, to make sure that things flow the way that they're supposed to flow. And, you know, we want to thank Mike Murray, who is our production admin. This guy has literally been hopping back and forth on the phone between me and Russell and Relax Just Create over the last couple of weeks with all the stuff that he's got to do. Mike sits on the phone or sits on the calls and listens to us talk. You know, he's one of the guys who really helps us out with our production end and says, hey, you forgot to do this or you forgot to do that. So this little podcast that we started off just between me and Russell has really grown into a massive brand. You know, I was able to hang out with Maggie Gagliardi this weekend out in Reno and to meet a woman who is so talented and so creative. You know, and hang out with her and her friends and you know, her boyfriend, who I hate to say, keep saying it, but the man looks like Zac Brown, man. I felt the need to hug him and party with him. You know, he's got a beard and he's got a hat, and it was just like, I felt like I was partying with Zac Brown this weekend. He didn't sing. That's the only thing I want to say. But to get Maggie up there and hang out with us and see how she is, you know, because we talk on the phone all the time. I see her creative. But to meet that person was just a really, really big thing for me. So I definitely want to thank those guys. So those are just a couple of the sponsors that I want to thank. You guys are awesome. And thank you for supporting us. And thank you for supporting them. Do me a massive favor, as I ask everybody every single week. Please, please, please. Go to iTunes and give us a review. Go to Audio Boom, give us a review. That is what keeps us at the forefront of what we're doing, and that is how iTunes can continue to move forward with everything that we want to get done. We are, again, the number one podcast in the food section. We are, again, in the new and noteworthy section on iTunes, and that makes us super happy. We are, again, featured on Audio Boom, and the reason why all of that happens is because of all of you guys. I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart. I will see you on the road. Boys and girls, don't forget to get out there. Eat, drink, travel. It's Road Rash.
We are going on a road trip.
Who's with me?
Woo! Can you dig it?
We are on a mission from God.
Can you dig it?
Take me to the top.
Hey!